Welcome to this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. I'm Trista Polo from iwokeupawesome.com, and I am your host. Each week, we learn the story behind that vanity plate. You know, the one you saw driving down the road? What did it say? What did it mean? Why did they choose it?
I'm so excited today to have Patrick Huba from Schenectady, New York. His license plate is podcasts. How fun is that? Welcome, Patrick.
Hey, welcome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you, and you're a fellow podcaster as well.
Yes, I am. HubaShow.com. That's my podcast.
Awesome. We're going to talk about that and lots of other stuff, but of course, we have to start with your plate story. I'd love to know the story behind your plate podcasts.
So when I moved back to New York, originally when I was in New York, I had my last name, Huba. All right. I couldn't believe it was available because for years I checked periodically on the DMV website. They have a section on their website where you can look up vanity plates and everything else. It wasn't available. And then one day I was like, you know what? It was like a rainy day in the summer. I said, let me check it out. So I type it all out and I came back. I said, there's no way, because it's four letters. The smaller you go character count, the harder it is to get a plate, especially one that sounds good. So I saw my last name and I'm like, I have to have it. Put it in. Had the plate. I had that for about 4 or 5 years. When I relocated to Florida, I decided not to get a vanity plate. I had a regular Florida plate, was down there for a couple of years, came back here. And just on a whim one day, I was like, you know what? Let me look up vanity plates. I was bored. I was like, you know what? Because I like doing domain names and stuff. So vanity plates, this is like another like branch of that. And I looked it up and I said, no way. Podcasts is available? With the height, with the explosion of podcasting, couldn't believe it. I didn't even think about it. I put all my credit card information in and I got it. It was unbelievable.
That's awesome. You know, what I love about your plate is you didn't use a zero or a five right. Or a three. Like, it's actually spelled out.
Yeah, there's no guessing. There's no guessing. There's no guesswork. You don't need a code book to have it. You don't have to be driving along and you're looking, right. What's that? You know, like sometimes I want to pull over and ask people, because there was a plate I saw a couple weeks ago and it's really bizarre. Over the last few weeks, I've been seeing tons of vanity plates all over the place. I saw a plate. I couldn't figure out what it was, but it was called Poor Speller. P-O-R with the little P-O-R. And then it was like S-P-L-R. And I'm looking like,
that's amazing.
I couldn't quite figure out what it was, you know? But I was tailing this person for like 5 minutes the whole time. I could have had who knows what behind me or next to me. I had no idea. I'm looking because I was so determined to figure out what it was.
That's awesome.
Yeah. In New York State, you only have 8 characters. I think other states have 9.
No, everybody has 7.
Okay.
And then, yeah. So every state except for New York, and I think it might be North Carolina. There's only 2 states that allow 8 characters. Every other state is 7.
No kidding. So New York, we're 6. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I think that's why they're so popular in New York, even though they're more pricey than a lot of places.
Yeah.
Because they are the 8 characters.
Yeah, that's probably a good reason. I mean, there's so many plates around up here.
You tried to get, and you were not successful. And I thought that was a fun story. Can you tell us about that?
Okay, so a long time ago, I bought a 1996 Chevy Caprice ex-police car, all right? I loved ex-police cars. They were boats, but they were fast and they were well-made. So I applied for the plate police with O and L flipped. So it was P-O-I-L-C-E, okay? So it was flipped, but in your rearview mirror, you're looking at it and it looks real. I thought that would have been really cool. So I applied for it. And I believe I paid for it too. This is going back about 15 or 16 years ago. And then they sent me a letter. They refunded my money because it was so confusingly similar. They wouldn't issue it. And a lot of times they don't lock out combinations. This is my understanding for people I know that told me that who work at the DMV. They don't lock out certain combinations until they actually get somebody applying for them.
Now you have a podcast.
Yep.
So tell us about that.
I used to be a broadcaster on 810 WGY at Clear Channel a long time ago, about, I don't know, 15, 18 years ago, somewhere around there. And so I've always been into radio. Even when I was a kid, we started out playing walkie-talkies, my brother and I and my sister, walkie-talkies. As I got older, I got a police scanner, and then a CB radio, then a ham radio, ham license, all that stuff. And I was a commercial broadcaster. So it's all been this gradual like evolution and podcasting. Originally, when podcasting came out, I believe Adam Curry was the first one to do a podcast, if I'm not mistaken. He was the MTV VJ back in the day on MTV. And it's my understanding that when he started that, it like people really didn't know what podcasting was. So as podcasting became more popular, more and more people got to realize, you know, what it was, what it was all about. And in the early stage of podcasting, it was like, you know, I'm never going to listen to that stuff, all this stuff. Nobody's going to do that. Because at the time, it was TV, primetime shows. Your content was very limited years ago. Now, it's the exact opposite. I canceled cable 4 years ago. I don't miss it at all. Because we have so many avenues of content now. You only have so much time in the day. So you're like day trading your time. Are you, how many hours are you on your phone? How many hours are you on your computer, TV? You can only do so much. So anyway, so as time went on, I always did voiceovers and stuff like that. And I decided one day, I said, you know what? I'm going to try doing podcasting. And I really love it. You know, I do it at my own leisure. I should be more consistent than what I am, but I really like it. It takes a little while to get an audience. But once you get an audience, and I mean, there's people all over the world that listen to my podcast. It is awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So when I got into it, a couple of my friends do podcasts and stuff like that. And what I like about it is that basically you don't have a program director. See, that's one of the things about working in broadcasting. If I'm a program director, I'm going to tell you what you can and can't do on the radio. You have freedom to a point, but when you're a podcaster, you have all of the freedom. You don't have a program director hanging over your head. Hey, let's talk about this. I don't think that sounded good or this. You have total freedom. And that's what it's about. People like that. But also what the other awesome thing about podcasting is that people can listen at their own at their own leisure.
But yeah, I've had, this is my third podcast and my fourth time hosting. And the one time I hosted it, and I realized during that experience that the interviewee format is my favorite. Mm-hmm. I've been a co-host, I've been a guest, but my favorite is interviewing others. So is your show, I think your show is more general conversation. Do you have guests?
Yeah, sometimes I have guests. It's general entertainment. See, one of the hardest things that I've come across is I don't really fit into a category. Some people only talk about sports. I can't just talk about one subject every, you know, three times a week. I can't do it. So, you know, one show might be the last one I did was about license plates. What I did was when I had a whole bunch of combinations that I kept taking screenshots of New York State vanity plates. And I'm like, I've got to do a show about this. This is fascinating. I couldn't believe some of the combinations that were available. Like camping is huge in New York State. People spend tens of thousands of dollars on camping supplies, gear, you know, campers. I can't believe nobody took the plate. Just the pulling. Can you imagine pulling into a campsite and it says camper on your car? Talk about a conversational piece. And that's just, and they have lakes, hiker was available, all kinds. I think I saved about 25 or 30 screenshots and I use those as the content of my show.
Now you have a penchant for checking if things are available. You do this as a side hustle with domain names.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I want to get into that a little bit. So when domain names first came out and the internet first came out, there were people in the world that I knew of that would go find the best domain names, buy them up, and then resell them. And then you and I were having our little pre-interview chat, and it turns out you were one of those guys, and you still are, right?
Yep.
So tell me a little about that from your perspective.
So when the internet was emerging, and one person out of every 5 square miles had a computer, one of my good friends where I grew up, he had a computer, right? So we were able to search. This is back when AOL was hourly. I remember when the internet was hourly. The first domain name I ever registered was localexplore.com. It was local, common spelling with an X, and then plore, okay? And the idea behind that was to basically, and it's all the things that we have now, is to go to a place like, let's say, for example, Albany, New York, and all the businesses in Albany that want to be in this directory would be there. So it was like a way to kind of like make navigation simpler. So that was the first thing I had. And when I can remember looking at domain names, not even realizing what I was looking at, all right, until in the future. Some of the names I saw sold for millions of dollars later on. When I was in college, it was $35, I think, a year to register a domain name. And that was a lot to, you know, when you're in college, $35 is a lot of money sometimes, right? So I hesitated to buy happybirthday.com. I'm like, you know, I really want it. It's awesome. This is back in like 97 or 98, something like that. So I'm like, you know, I should really, I want that name. Well, I don't know, 35. Make a long story short, I hesitated for 2 weeks. Somebody bought it. They flipped it 6 months later for about 75,000. It changed hands about one or two other times since then, but now it's valued at about 2.5 million.
Actually, I just looked, power of the internet, right? I just looked up happybirthday.com. It is currently for sale for $4 million.
There you go. It just increased last year or so when I looked at it. It's because whoever had it for a while, you could go into supermarkets, right? In the card section or CVS or all convenience store. And they actually had cards they were selling. And on the back, if you want more of our cards, go to happybirthday.com. So there was like this thing, right? And I remember walking into a store one time and I saw that and I'm like, that's unbelievable. I could have had that name. That right there, that would have been a gold mine. But there were a lot of names. I remember seeing like albany.com, New York, all the states, basically real short ones too. Didn't realize the potential or the value of these early on. And people that went all in on this stuff, and they're all like sitting pretty now because they're worth a fortune.
Well, I'll tell you, my company, we have an online shopping site and the name is shop.com. And that at one time had the record for the most expensive resale purchase price. I don't know what the exact amount was. It was over $1 million, but at the time that it was sold, it broke a record.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. So that's a good one. Now you had some good ones that you've owned and sold. Tell me about some of the good ones you did snag.
I used to own waterballoons.com. I sold that a long time ago. There was, let's see here. What else did back in the day? I'm trying to think some of the other names that I had. I've had hundreds and hundreds of names over the years. Sometimes the lists were so big, I would forget what names I had. And I would always have to go in, hey, do you have something similar to this? I don't really know. I have to go in and look and all that. But a place you can go and get a daily weekly tally up to, you know, yearly tally is dnjournal.com. If you go there, they've been online, I think, since the late 90s, if I'm not mistaken. And what they do is they show you all of the names that are being sold. And it gives you the price and everything. I think 2 years ago, voice.com sold for $30 million. You know, $30 million. Then they give you all the lists of names that are selling. All the extensions, too. All the, you know, say top 20 extensions. I think there's like 600 now. It's crazy. But the ones that I always stick by are .com, .net, and .org. I don't deviate from those anymore. I've gotten burned in the past, .cc, .mobi. .mobi was a big thing. And everybody thought that this mobile world was going to go to .mobi. Well, it didn't. But the thing about domaining is you waste a lot of money. So when you do sell a name, you're just recouping a lot of time and lost names that you let fall off. Most of the time, you know, every now and then you might have a big hit, but now it's so hard to find good names. I kind of compare it to panning for gold. Okay. Gold has pretty much been mined out on the surface, most places that are popular, but you can still go to rivers and stuff out west and pan for gold and all that stuff. You might find a couple little nuggets like this or some, you know, gold dust. And maybe over the course of a few days of panning for gold, you might have maybe an ounce of gold. But if you ever, I've been told, but I've never panned for gold, but I know people who have, they said, when you get bit by the gold bug, it's like this obsession that you can't get rid of and it will never escape you. When you find real gold in the ground that you can turn in for money.
Yeah.
You're going to want to excavate the whole mountainside.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I found it once. I can find it again.
Oh yeah. No, it's that mentality. It's like being at the slot machine. You know, the next one's going to be the winner. This next pan that I move around in the water, I might find a big nugget that's worth, you know, 3 ounces or whatever.
To dnjournal.com and the record for, I'm not that impressed, the record for 2020 just sold on November 11th. And it was bullish.com for $1,080,000.
Bullish.com.
Compared to some of the ones we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Now, you told me that you owned conveniencestore.com.
Yep. I used to
own. That's a pretty cool one.
Yep. I bought that a long time ago, and I sold that to a large corporation with a couple others. When it comes to domain names, it's the art of outthinking people. Okay. Because, and what I mean by that is, let's say there's a brand new industry that emerges, right? Let's say podcasting is starting tomorrow. Nobody's ever heard of podcasts before. So you'll start thinking, you know, maybe you'll get podcastequipment.com because you know people are going to want to buy equipment or you know, podcast, whatever, transactions or payments or something like that, or advertising, you know, and you'll start like putting these keywords in and mixing them around and stuff. It's very tedious process. And it's a very tedious process and it really is labor intensive. It's very labor intensive. So people want to sit down at the computer and they think they're going to make, you know, $100,000 in 5 minutes. Back in the 90s, yes, you could, but not anymore because there's thousands of people every hour doing this. I've actually been at the computer looking at names, refreshed the screen, and somebody got them. We were all watching the screen somewhere in the world together and they grabbed them.
I can't believe it's that big still. Yeah. I mean, I could have gotten that it was huge in the 90s when the internet was starting.
Yep.
But I can just go to GoDaddy, buy a name, not buy a name, whatever. Like, it's amazing to me that that the aftermarket domain name is still very big.
It's really big still. And the reason being is because the first step to establishing yourself on the web is getting a domain name. It's the first step. That's why.
Yeah, you shouldn't even name your company until you've made sure you have domain name.
Yeah.
And the Facebook name and the Instagram name, yep, and the YouTube name, and the LinkedIn name. So it's a different world. Now, you had a name that you actually were not able to sell as a result of some case law. Yep. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. A long time ago, I think it was back in 2000, 2001. It may have registered it in 99, somewhere around there. I own DunkinDonuts.com. The phonetic spelling. Now, it's really interesting because if you ask people how you spell Dunkin' Donuts, you'll get mixed reactions or mixed responses. And I own Dunkin', D-U-N-K-I-N, Donuts, the phonetic spelling, not D-O-N-U-T-S like Dunkin' Donuts is spelled. It's D-O-U-G-H-N-U-T-S. And they wanted that name. There's four things you had to prove. I forget exactly what all four of them were, but they could prove two out of the four. Eventually, you know, I just gave it to them, but it kind of held up their line of napkins and cups with their actual address on it. I remember that. I remember not seeing their website address on anything until after they acquired this name from me. And then everything came out, like napkins, straws, you know, all the little cups they sell and everything else like that. So I wonder if that had any impact on that. I don't know if it did.
Sure.
But my case, my domain case, was used for quite a bit of other cases as confusingly similar. That's where they get you, is confusingly similar. You know, a kind of like a branch off of domains is social media names. I'm actually doing it now on Instagram. There's a name that I want, and the person hasn't used their Instagram account in years. And I tried contacting Instagram. I want to talk to see if I can get it, because a long time ago, Twitter... All right. I wanted my last name on Twitter, H-U-B-A. Well, the way I got that was somebody else had it, but their account was inactive. I think they had one tweet in a 2-year time span and no activity. So I wrote a very persuasive letter to Twitter and they said, hey, no problem. This person obviously doesn't use their account. Boom, it's yours. And I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it.
Wow, I can't believe that either.
This was a long time ago, though. This is back in like 2010, 9, somewhere in there. Now, I don't think they would do that. But Instagram, I'm trying really hard to get one of the names on Instagram. And I think I'll probably be successful. So we'll have to see. But I actually sold a screen name on eBay before. AOL Instant Messenger. What I would do is I would come up with combinations and then grab them and just keep them. And one time I wanted to see if I could sell a screen name on eBay. And I actually did. It was like for $8. But I just wanted to see if I could do it. And the screen name was, this was on eBay. That was the screen name on AOL.
Yeah, you almost have to be like a chess player, forecaster, psychic to be in this world.
Yeah, it's very much like a chess game.
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is. Now, you've worked in radio and you've also worked on the railroad as well. And I wanted to talk about that real briefly because my husband's father was an engineer. He was a signal engineer for the railroad for his whole career. And my grandfather worked for the railroad and my husband's grandfather worked for the railroad. So I got a lot of railroad in my history. So what do you do for the railroad?
Well, back in 2006, I applied to the railroad and I was hired because I was a broadcaster. But the problem with broadcasting is if I'm the host, right? If I'm the host and I have a producer and another producer and a censor and a writer and somebody that, you know, like an engineer, you have all these people that are tied to you. All right. So think of it like all these vines going out. At the end of the vines, you got people. Well, if I'm the host and I get fired, all of you guys suffer indirectly because of me. You didn't do anything wrong as a producer. I may have said something or, you know, whatever. This goes for radio across the whole land. So if a host gets fired, you suffer indirectly. And I was tired of that because that happened to me. I was part of a show. A host got let go. They still retained me, but it was for a temporary basis. And I said, I don't like all this unknown, the land of the unknown. So that's when I started looking around for better jobs. And I was hired. I got hired at the post office and the railroad, and I went with the railroad. So I started out as a conductor, and then I was a train dispatcher for about 12 years. And train dispatcher is like an air traffic controller on the ground. And that was a lot of fun. Very technical field, very stressful. You have to perform high performance the whole time. And the other thing about it, too, it's really interesting. There's so much involved. See, a lot of people think you get on a train and you drive a train. You don't drive a train. You operate a train. Train doesn't have a steering wheel, okay? And I can't believe how many people actually say that. The other thing about it, too, is that there's so many rules and regulations. Most people don't understand what is involved at the railroad. It's a 24-hour-a-day business, 7 days a week, rain or shine. If it's 30 below zero outside, there's still railroaders out there working. It's amazing. It's one of those types of careers it's one of those careers that when you go to work, you feel like you're back in time.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You feel like you're back in time because the railroads are almost 200 years old. You know.
And you were on the River Line freight.
Mm-hmm. River Line sub. Yep. That's where I dispatched.
On the Hudson River. And yep. I see that go by all the time. I actually live on that side of the river. So if I'm going across the Poughkeepsie Bridge or the Newburgh Bridge, I see that all the time. And you actually said in our pre-conversation that that's the most important railway. And I was curious why that is.
Okay, so if you're looking at the Hudson River on a map, the left side, the west side of the Hudson River is the River Line. The right side is the Hudson Line. The Hudson Line used to be dispatched by us from Poughkeepsie North to Rensselaer. That's all Amtrak now, but it used to be a different railroad. The west side is the freight side of the railroad. Okay. So they're two totally different railroads controlling two different sets of tracks. The River Line, basically the Northeast corridor from Buffalo to Albany, Albany to Boston, Albany down to New Jersey, that is considered the Northeast corridor. It is a very historic and important route. That is probably the most critical section of railroad out of the whole entire United States, okay? Basically, you're connecting New York City, New Jersey to Buffalo and beyond.
And it's still used every single day. It never got overtaken by trucking or anything else. It's probably where a lot of the cargo is moved.
It's a historic route. And what's really neat about it is you go through the West Point Tunnel. The only time you're going to go through that tunnel is if you work on the railroad or you're actually a cadet at West Point. I believe above the tunnel, they still mint the West Point Silver Eagles and maybe the Golden Eagles too. I think they do. I'm pretty sure they still do the coins there. And if you have one, they'll have a W on it for West Point. That's my understanding of them. I'm not a big coin collector, but I do know they put the W on the coin when they make them.
Okay. Awesome.
There's a lot of beautiful places up and down the Hudson River. Did you ever hear of Bannerman's Island?
Oh, sure.
Do you know the history behind that?
My husband does. He is very fascinated with Bannerman's Island and used to sneak onto the island before it was open with his friends and camp there and things like that. And then I had a friend, I worked in New York City for several years. And I had a friend from my job who was part of the initial historic team that was working on opening it. And we were one of the first people to tore it when it was opening for public consumption. And my friend's daughter has, I think she was the assistant director or the stage manager for one of the plays that they did there last year, because they now have a whole theater series on the island. It's wonderful that they're allowing it to be used and seen and experienced.
Yeah.
Because for so long, it was just crumbling around us.
It's amazing. I would always look at that when I was on the trains, and I'm like, you know, I want to go there someday. There's just something about seeing it out there. You know, the stone structure, you got the mountains behind it and the river. It looks very medieval, and I like that kind of era, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It has a very rich history as well. So I always like to turn the tables before we wrap up and see if you have a question for me. So if there's one question you'd like to ask me, this is a great time. Do you have one?
What were the other podcasts that you used to be a part of? What were they about?
Oh, so I was part of one that with a friend of mine who is a Reiki master, psychic, and social worker.
Really?
So we did a podcast, a lot of conversations around those topics. And then another friend of mine is in the top 1% of the Pampered Chef consultants in the world.
In the world?
In the world. And so she and I did a podcast about network marketing, talking about like how to be successful and tips and tricks and things to keep in mind. The first one is no longer available, but the second one is still around. And I just switched my website over, but until then, I was still getting updates about people listening to it. And we haven't done a new episode on that one in like 5 years, maybe six.
And people are, isn't that something? See, that's the power of the internet. That's the difference between a broadcaster and a podcaster. See, if you keep this stuff, you might, and this is what I tell people, you got to be patient, because most people that get into podcasting, oh, how come I don't have 50,000 listeners? Like, are you kidding me? That takes a long time to get up to that. If you have one or two listeners a week when you first start off, that's good. You're doing good. But for people to sit down, I see it all the time on like these Facebook groups I'm a part of and podcasting and stuff. You know, hey, I just spent, you know, this money on this equipment, and, you know, I only have one person this whole month that listened to me. Well, you might have a microphone, you might have a terrible setup where there's hiss and hum, you know, and nobody wants to listen to that. So they're not going to download it. But the other part of it too is you could have episodes that are kind of stagnant for a while, and then all of a sudden they explode for whatever reason. I've had that happen to me. I had a lot of listeners in China, a lot of listeners. And I couldn't understand, like, all of a sudden out of nowhere, boom, I had all these people in China that were listening to my show and downloading my episodes. And
awesome.
It was unbelievable. So like, you never really know, but that's what's great about the internet. This stuff can sit out there and it's just as fresh now as it was 3 years ago when it was made. And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty. There's no like shelf life. And for whatever reason, there's vanity plates in the news all over the place. And there's this like land rush to get vanity plates, and people are typing it and stuff like this, and it's coming back. That's how I discovered you. That's how I discovered you. When I was, again, this is when I was looking up podcasts or vanity license plates, DMV website, and I just started typing them into Google to see if I can, like, I think what I was doing is I wanted to see if other people had podcasts in other states. And that's when I kept coming back with these plates with this, what's plate story? Like, it's just everywhere in Google images, you know, because it's so niche. It's so defined that you're going to be, you know, especially with your podcast you do consistently, you're going to be ranked in the top one or two consistently. You were. And I'm like, who is this plate story? You know, everywhere. And then that's when I was looking more into it and stuff. And that's how the ball got rolling.
Yeah. And I was so excited that you reached out to me.
Yeah. I was fascinated when I saw that somebody was doing a podcast, because I think all the time, what could people do or what could I do to stand out? Right. And I'm like, somebody's doing a vanity plate podcast. You've got to be kidding me. I couldn't believe it. And you were in the same home state as me. I thought that was awesome. I thought that was great. Because I kept seeing that. I'm like, you know, those are New York plates. I'm like, that's got to be like the way you modify them and stuff. I'm like, she's got to be from New York. How cool is this? You know, and I thought that was awesome. So Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I've said this before, but I've had a lot of ideas in my life. And usually the response I get to my idea is, oh, well, good luck with that. Oh, mm-hmm. You're still doing that.
Yeah, oh, right.
That's nice. But this is one of the first things, this and the name of my business, my URL,
mm-hmm.
are the two best ideas I've had. So I guess I'm getting better with age, but I tell people about this podcast or they find out about it, they're like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Oh, for
I can't
sure.
believe I didn't think of it.
Yep.
That's the answers I always get.
You know what it is too? I talked to somebody who, when I was living in Florida for a little while, one of my neighbors used to be a YouTube celebrity, right? And she gave it up because she had people showing up to her place, figuring out where she lived. Hey, can I have a signature? Getting bombarded with photographs, all this stuff. She got so tired of it. So she told me, I said, we were swimming around the pool one day down in Florida. And I said, what is the biggest factor with making it or breaking it on the internet? And she says, you have to be relatable. You have to be relatable to people. And this relates to me. There's so many people out there. Everybody drives a car. Everybody has a license plate. A lot of people are in the vanity plates. And I'm telling you, your show's only going to get more popular as time goes on.
Oh, from your mouth. Yep. It's been really nice having you. I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
Likewise.
And if people want to check out your podcast, I'll have the link in the show notes so they'll be able to get to know you more and spend some time with you through your channels.
Well, I'd really appreciate that. And thank you for having me as a guest on your show. It's been amazing. I love talking about vanity plates. And I'm so happy there's somebody out there in the world doing amazing podcasts about vanity plates because people love this stuff. They love it.
Yes. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right. You too.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. Please subscribe to Trista's Plate Story Podcast to get the story behind all those vanity plates driving with you on the road. And if you would like to nominate the owner of a license plate, including you, or visit any of our partners and sponsors, come and see us at platestory.com. That's PL8story.com, and give us the details. If you enjoyed this episode, please drop a review and give us a share. I'm Trista Polo, wishing you well on the road to your next adventure.